Hello, how the devil are we? If you're in as good a mood as I am, we're in for hell of a day, aren't we? What can I say? Right, let's go straight to the chat box. Daz316, Tuckomania, Pat Brady, Alonzo Spencer, the great Alonzo Spencer, and 235100, Memo IR, Devastinct J. Never, I haven't seen you before. Welcome to the chat box, pal. Drum D, Nude Gooner. Marcus Hodges is there. Oh, Marco Bricks UK, Seth Okaya, Shefik One. Hello, one and all. Alan Bastard MP, Gold Roger, Fly KJ, Brandon Jason Grosso, Matt Walker at Tim, Stephen Edwards, CeeLaw AFC, Stan the Man 450. How are we all? What can I say? More utter crap. This is not going to be a good day. Kevin Theobald says, Aaron Ramsey in tears at his guard of honour. Mark Wilkins, how are you, pal? No sleep or nine? Well, yeah, it's sad to see that Rambo go, but he's best off out. Get out while you can, Aaron. Get out while you can. Big shout out to Kurt Ice. He was making his first trip to the Emirates today, and we serve up that sack of crap for his first visit. What can I say? What can I say? Angus joining me today. Dom couldn't make it. So we have one of our old pals here. Welcome, Drew. Say hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me back. It's been a while.
Good to have you back, pal. Good to have you back. Speak up a little bit, pal. Or turn your
volume up as much as possible. I'll try my best, yeah.
Top man. See, Drew, he should be in a sick bed, but no.
Yeah.
He's here. Or you. Also, he is my brother from another mother. Say hello, John.
I'm not doing it today, Jace. No, I'm sorry.
Not I don't blame that. You. I don't blame you. I don't blame you. Shout out to Drum ND. Sorry, mate. I thought I'd shouted you out earlier on. My apologies. Let's go straight to it. Arsenal Brighton today. John, lineups. What are your thoughts?
Weird to see the back four, although happy because Koz needed the rest, so that was good. Attacking lineup with Mkhitaryan and Ozil both in the team, so I was interested to see exactly how we were going to line up when we're actually on the pitch. Is it 4-4-2? Is it 4-2-2-2? 4-2-3-1? You know, whatever you want to call it. Lichtsteiner playing was weird, but I guess we don't have another right back. Could have played Jenkinson, maybe. They're much of a muchness in terms of ability. Lichtsteiner at this point in his career, Jenkinson, I suppose, has got a bit more pace on him, but he's not the best. So probably the best thing we could put out, I guess, with wanting to rest Koz.
To be honest, it's a strong team we've got, isn't it?
Yeah.
Other than Lichtsteiner, that's a strong team.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, you've got Xhaka and you've got Torreira, who should be able to cover Lichtsteiner. It's a back four. He's not having to play wing back, so he shouldn't have to get up and down quite as much. He's got Mkhitaryan, I think, in front of him, or at least I thought that's what it would be at the start of the game. And you have seen that Mickey can track back. He plays better at home, so he was hoping you'd see a bit of that today. So I guess that was the only like sort of worry spot in the team.
Yeah, J-Rob has just smashed in with a €5 donation. Thank you very much, J-Rob. You are far too good for the Arsenal, pal. Far too good. And J-Rob says, lads, complete shite. That is all. I can't say anything else than that, and I agree with you. Drew, we started off strongly. A lot of early pressure. Mkhitaryan hitting the post early doors. I thought, here we go.
It was a bright start, but that same issue that we've seen for a while now keeps popping up. It's we let teams off the hook, and it's incredibly frustrating. Today was a match where you get that early goal. You can debate on whether or not if it was a penalty or not. Personally, it wasn't, but I'm not going to argue because we converted it. When you go 1-0 up and inside the first 10 minutes and you're at home, it's your job to kick on and get that second goal. If we score two, the match is done. You know, Brighton averages less than a goal a game over the course of the entire season. So you have to say that, you know, on the strength of it, if we score two, then the job is finished. But we couldn't kick on. We had a couple of good chances, you know. Keeper bails them out on a few occasions. He did quite well, Matt Ryan did. But I think it's just as the match progressed, we got that comfortable air about us again. You know, we go 1-0 up early. We think it's already finished. we don't kick on really and really keep the pressure on, and then we keep letting Brighton sit back, bunker in with those two banks of four. It's when we're building play, we're insistent on allowing them to get back and be comfortable. And as you can see today, you know, you have Duncan Duffy, everything in the box is meat and drink for them. They did absolutely fantastic. So you have to then ask, why were we playing into Brighton's hands? Why are we kept playing balls into the box, and that's what they defend best. They struggled to defend when we went at them, when we were direct, you know, threw balls into the area, you know, make their defenders actually work. You put a ball into the box, they're going to command it. We don't have anyone in the air really who can challenge them on every ball. So I don't know why we weren't even playing to our strengths as the match progressed. And for me, that's the most important frustrating thing about it. And that is something that either if the players can't somehow work out for themselves, which boggles my mind if that's the case, it's got to come from the manager. The manager is sitting there knowing what's working and what isn't when you're in the final third. It was clear to all of us. The best chances we had is when we made them uncomfortable. You know, you get them out of their shape, and we just didn't do it enough. And when we did do it, that's where our best chances came from. So I just don't understand, for me, why we, in the end, it's just such a mess. But we've seen it before under a different manager. So that raises a whole other host of questions.
Yeah, absolutely. Yvonne Okofor comes in with another donation. Thank you, Yvonne. You're an absolute rock star. She says, a big summer clear out next season. Important. I don't disagree with you. The problem is, I don't think we're going to do it. And I don't think... we're going to have to wait and see what happens, but I just can't see it happening. Right, John. We get early penalty. It's a foul on Nacho in the box. It's soft, but looking at Taylor's positioning, I can understand why he gives it. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, it's one of those ones where, you know, the Brighton player, is it Johan Bakhsh? I've got no idea how you pronounce it.
Johan Bakhsh, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, if you put your leg in there in that position, from that angle, you're giving the referee the opportunity to give a penalty. I do think it was soft. I thought he got the ball. But, you know, we're at the point in the season where you take those. And if an Arsenal player did that, then you would say, why are you sticking your leg in from that angle, from that position? You're asking the ref to give it. It wasn't the strongest appeal from Nacho, and the referee did take his time making the decision. But sometimes you get him, sometimes you don't. I don't know whether that would be cleaned up with VAR next season. Maybe that doesn't get given. You know, who knows? But at the time, I was happy because I thought, up until that point in the goal, I actually thought we were playing quite well, and we were doing a lot more what Drew was talking about there with the sort of through balls being direct. We weren't really crossing it so much, and there was some really good play between Aubameyang and Lacazette. So we were getting at them and trying to, you know, because we always knew Brighton were going to come here and sit and, you know, running at them and making them make the tackles and make the fouls. That's the best way to go about it.
Yeah, I got to be honest there, you know, I mean, you saw Nacho go down, his foot's up. It was soft, what can I say, you know? I mean, you know, I'd been happy if that was given against us. But Drew, Aubameyang makes no mistake with it, thankfully.
Yeah, credit to him for having the confidence to keep taking penalties despite, you know, one of his efforts that he had earlier in the season. Again, you know, as I said before, we didn't do the job of kicking on after he scored the penalty, and I think that's on us. That's on everybody. But it's the start you wanted, and it's the start you expected. But, you know, there's not much more to say on it, really, especially about the penalty. But I still maintain that in terms of the foul itself, I don't think it was a penalty. But, you know, because March gets breathed on and he goes down, that's never a foul either. But, you know, credit to Anthony Taylor for consistently giving poor decisions in the box. So if you have to give us a penalty, you have to give them a penalty. But if you take ours away, they don't get theirs. I think it's either one or the other. Either neither is a pen or both are a pen in his eyes. So at least he showed consistency in that regard. But then again, you have to say, if we don't score that penalty, if that's never called, you know, then you're looking at a situation where, in theory, we wouldn't have scored. We didn't score any goals from the run of play against a team that's battling relegation at home. And then you look at the brass tacks, we surrendered three goals to Crystal Palace at home. And inexplicably now, all of a sudden, when we're up against it, and push comes to shove, and we need results, we stop getting results. We've won one in our last six; four of them were losses. You know, one of them, one of them was a draw today. That's poor. And you can say, you know, Everton and Wolves are decent sides who are probably the best of the rest out of the top six, but still, it's just so inconsistent from us. Like, and the worrying thing is when the back was against the wall and we needed to push on, when everyone around us was giving us the opportunity, we failed at the final hurdle. That, for me, is the biggest problem of this entire season, you have to say.
We've absolutely bottled it, mate.
Yeah.
Absolutely bottled it. And the man who's got to take the blame for this is Unai Emery. Undoubtedly. Martin Gilmore smashes in the donation. Thank you ever so much, Martin. You're a rock star.
That's 4 points from 18.
Yeah.
In this running.
4 points. We're going to go through the match pretty quickly now, because there's a lot of questions coming in the moment. And, you know, one that Tom's from Norway's just asked. We're going to try to get through as many as possible. John, you saw Murray go through the back of Socrates pretty early on, and then not long later, Socrates gets booked for diving. How come Murray doesn't get pick up a yellow card for deliberately going through the back of Socrates, and yet Sock dived? Make no bones about it, he dived, and he deservedly got his yellow. What were your thoughts?
I mean, yeah, the yellow card was fine. It was a dive. You know, it's simulation. He goes down. I don't. You know, we'd get pissed off if a player did it against us and got a free kick. So you can't have it the other way. I'm not sure why Murray isn't booked. I've got no idea. Absolutely no idea. Look, referee consistency all season has been poor. I think it's been one of the worst seasons, at least that I can remember. And it's not just Anthony Taylor. It's every ref, you know. And I don't know if it's maybe because it's been highlighted more, especially with the whole VAR thing coming in next season, and there's so much more pressure on referees and all the things they're doing. But yeah, it's frustrating. You should get a yellow. You knew that Murray's going to be physical. He's going to be there, you know, fighting, battling for everything. And I thought that Socrates would enjoy that, but I'm not sure he necessarily got the better of him today.
I thought Socrates had a poor game today, and I don't like to say it, but I thought he was fucking rubbish. But I don't rate them anyway. Paul Simpson, we're going to come to that point at the end of the show, mate. Okay, we are going to talk about that. I think it's a valid point, but I got different views to you on that. Sean Lee Goodwin smashes in with a 20 quid donation, and he says, "We go again next season, people. Love the show, guys. Chin up, Sean Lee. Thank you ever so much. You are far, far, far too generous, fella. That is really kind of you. Thank you ever so much." Drew, you see Mkhitaryan give away a cheap free kick on the edge of the box, which is fired into the wall, thankfully. I mean, it kind of sums up Mkhitaryan's season, doesn't it?
It's frustrating because, you know, at Dortmund, he had a season that was absolutely world-class in his final year before he moves on to Manchester United. But he struggled at Man United. You have to say on the strength of it, he struggled with us overall. It's one, for me, I think it's one of those situations where he is a player despite his clear ability, because when he turns up, he's absolutely fantastic. But he's been woefully inconsistent. And I think it's a question more of maybe he's just one of those types of players who is suited for a specific type of play and potentially for a league that isn't the Premier League. You know, he could easily go back to the Bundesliga and have an absolute stormer of a season next year if that was to happen, just, you know, throwing that out there. But it's got to be one of those what-if scenarios, because, you know, he does give you a player who he's decent on the ball. He can pick a pass. He likes to be direct. But again, we're not playing in a system that's direct all the time. And I think that's the biggest problem with him. I think if you throw him into a different team in this league, who, when they get the ball, they turn and they just go forward, you know, with as many numbers as possible and don't try to build play, I think you see a different player. And I think this season you saw that out of him, where his best performances were when we were direct, when we were incisive, when our sole aim was to just get further forward and create chances instead of building play from the back, you know, through possession. You see two different players. So for me, as much as I do appreciate the season he had at Dortmund and the season that you know, got him the name that he has, I feel like we might have to move on from him simply because if this is how we're going to play with Emery, he's not suited. I think it's that simple. And Goon is correct. And as I said before, you know, Mkhitaryan had that one good season at Dortmund, but the two previous at Dortmund, he wasn't very good. In his first season, he was average at best at Dortmund. In the second season, he struggled mightily. It's the third season that he genuinely kicked on and he got that performance out of him. But one good season in three at Dortmund, I don't think was good enough to warrant him a move to United. I don't think it's necessarily good enough to warrant him for us to try to keep him, especially with the wages that he's on. So I think this season shows you that maybe it's just not good enough.
Yeah, I do agree. I think the amount of money he's on and the amount of return we get of him is just pointless.
I think that's it. If he was on half that money, you could argue maybe keeping him as a depth option, but you can't have someone on 200k a week as a depth option. That's not acceptable. So
he's never a 200k a week player. You know, never in a million years. The magnificent Blair Slater, international man of mystery. He piles in the donation and he says, as always, thanks, boys. You're brilliant, unlike the Arsenal today. Angry Slater out. I don't like Blair Slater being angry. I'm annoyed at Unai Emery, and I'm annoyed at the Arsenal. Andre Rodescu says, Jace is missing Ramsey, bawling his eyes out.
Jace, don't go on Twitter until the show's finished, because you will start crying if you see Rambo, the state he's in. I just had a look. Bad decision.
Do you know what annoys me? Do you know what really fucking annoys me, okay? And this is going to go to pot here now. He went out to the club. Take a fucking look at it. Bollocks. You know, Raul and Unai Emery should be fucking ashamed of themselves. You're letting 50 million quid. If you'd have sold him, I wouldn't have given a shit. I wouldn't have given a damn if they'd have sold him. But, you know, to force him out and to brief against him the way they have. And all this, you know, I'll tell you one thing. Unai Emery can fuck off. He can go. This dog shit football he played all season, I've had a gutsful of it. Oh, it's not his squad. He's got a 2-year contract. He's meant to do the best with what he's got. The guy has failed. You know, if you know, he's failed in the league miserably. Look at our return in the last few games. It's absolute fucking rubbish. And he stands there, you know, we're trying to do this. You've done got a fucking clue. Fucking annoyed. By the way, massive shout out to Carl Walker, who's in the box. I've got to say this. If you want to catch a tube, catch it now before he gets into work. Catch it now. You know, it's as simple as that. What did I say? Improvement on last season by, 4 points? An improvement on last season by 4 points.
We're still in with a chance in the Europa League, at least.
Do you think we're going to beat Chelsea at the moment?
We've got to get past Valencia first. We've still got another leg of that to go.
John, we see Leno save from Solly March. Then Ryan saving from a great Mustafi header. Fantastic save from Ryan, wasn't it?
Yeah, he had a really good game for them, I thought, all day today. He pulled off some great ones. There was that. There was a really good one from Aubameyang as well. And he kept him in the game because I think if he doesn't, you know, I think, like Drew said, you know, if we go 2-0 up early, I think the game's dead. I think if we score a second goal before they get the equaliser, I think the game's probably dead at that point. And they kind of just go, okay, look, we're safe anyway. It's 2-0. It's fine now. We're not going to put the effort in. But whilst it's 1-0 and they're still creating a little bit, they're going to have some belief and a bit of freedom in their play and go, you know, this is a free roll of the dice for them, essentially. So we needed one of those to go in, or, you know, the one where Mkhitaryan early on hits the post and it comes back out, if it bounces off the back of the keeper and goes in, something like that. We just didn't get any of them today. But fair play to Ryan. He put in a really good performance for Brighton today.
Absolutely. Drew, you see Ryan's save a shot from Aubameyang, then Mkhitaryan, as John says, you know, and then Mkhitaryan just misses the Duffy back pass. Oh, it was frustrating, wasn't it?
It sums up our luck on the day, honestly. You know, we created enough chances to get a result, but either we didn't get the right bounce in a situation like you just mentioned, or Aubameyang flashes a chance or two wide, you know, things of that nature. You know, again, Ryan comes up big in two or three big moments. I think that's, I mean, again, I do think despite how poor overall I think we were on the day, I do think we created enough chances to get a second and to go on and get 3 points. So, you can't say it's entirely our fault because we did do enough on one end. But again, we made it too easy for Brighton to do enough on the other for them to get a point out of it. So
the thing is, this is Brighton was 17th. And, oh, whoa, 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 whoa. We got a spammer.
Yes, we do. Have fun.
Mush. I'm going to say this now. I'm not sitting in it. Get the fuck out of my box, you wank stain. Sorry, guys. I'm in a bad enough mood after that performance. I don't need a fucking spammer. Right, that was the first half. You know, I'm just to remind everybody, we're playing against Brighton, who've only just avoided relegation, who struggled to score all season. And that was, you know, yes, we created chances, but we couldn't finish anything. What can I say? Right, guys, it's that time again. It's that time again. There are now 260 of you in this chat box. I got 37 likes. Do you really think that's acceptable? Do you really think that's acceptable? Or are you just playing at being the Anthony Taylors of the refereeing world? Because it looks like you are. You know, we should be in treble figures by now. What the hell is going on? Come on, tappy tappy, let's get going. I expect 100 likes, please, because this is ridiculous. Here we are. We got to sit through that bag of wank that we've had to endure, okay? And then we got to come on here and talk about it. We're not particularly happy. No, I'm not a happy taffy, as Kevin Theobald says. I'm really not, okay? But I'm here for you. Now we're up to 61. That's okay. That's getting there. That's getting there. But come on. Don't shame your parents any more than you have already. Start tapping that like button. I'll have 100, please. Too sweet. Let's get going. Tappy, tappy. Chill Doctor says tap for Rambo. Oh, God, what can I say? On to the second half, guys. John, you know, I expected us to come out at it in the second half, but it wasn't us. It was Brighton who came out the blocks. And Leno, early save from Solly March. Then you get Mkhitaryan giving the ball away cheaply up top, as he has done all season, all fucking season. On the break, March attacks the box. Xhaka, he's not keeping up with him, but he has to stick his hand out. And March dives over. You know, what could you say?
Yeah, it's another soft one, but I think Drew summed it up perfectly in that if the ref gives the first one for us, then he's got to give that one as well. Maybe it is a little bit of levelling up. I swear referees at halftime look back at their decisions if they get a chance and go, oh, fuck, I've made a cock up there. and try and even it out if they can in games, because you see it so many times. I don't know why Mkhitaryan didn't take the shot and he just sort of lays it off. I thought, honestly, he was just going to hit it there. But, you know, as bad as that decision was he made, we've still got, what have they got to travel? I don't know, 70-odd yards with the ball, Brighton, yeah, before they get into our box. Look, Xhaka's not going to catch March. And as he goes down very easy, I actually think he does maybe just clip his foot. It's not intentional. He's trying to get out of the way of him. And you can see Xhaka's, you know, trying to not touch him in any way, but he connects and he knows straight away that it's going to be a penalty and he's like, oh, I've done it again. You've got that side of the pitch, what, Lichtsteiner and Mkhitaryan up there, and Granit Xhaka, our slowest player on the pitch, probably trying to chase back against Solly March, one of Brighton's better players. It's not going to end well. I mean, as soon as they got the penalty, you knew it was going to be a goal as well, because Glenn Murray just doesn't miss.
All credit to Glenn Murray, okay? You know, people take a piss out of him an awful lot, okay? But, you know, he keeps on performing, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He keeps on performing.
I think it's that weird thing. I think if he wasn't English, people probably wouldn't say it about him. Because if you're an English striker and you basically don't make the national team, I mean, people just write you off as just useless. And because of his age and everything else, his style of play, he's never had any pace. He's not an exciting player to watch. But if you put the ball in the box, he knows how to make himself a yard of space. You know, he had a couple of headed chances that if the crosses in were at a bit more pace on him, he probably would have scored. Instead of, you know, giving Leno a few of his easier saves of the day, because he did make some good ones as well. But yeah, he's a decent player and he's scored goals in every league he's ever played in. You give him a chance at a penalty spot, he's not gonna miss it.
Yeah, Data KLBC, where are you going? Who said you could leave? Stay in the box, please. Honestly, these people. Drew, that was Brighton's first goal away to us since 1983.
I don't know what you expect me to say to that, other than I'm almost not surprised in a way. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people were talking about it on Twitter. Just Brighton hasn't taken any points off any other top six side this season other than us. So, again, that sums up the season entirely. It's just multiple points in the year where we're gifting points away to people who, with all due respect to Brighton, you know, I don't like to downplay smaller clubs or clubs fighting relegation because they're in the league on merit, obviously. But when, on the strength of it, these aren't points you should be dropping. It's simple, especially at home, you know. So for me, that sums up the day. It sums up everything we need to focus on in the summer in terms of what Emery needs to be doing on his end, the players who might need to come in, who might need to be chucked out of the club. Just a lot of questions for the summer.
I've got to be honest with you, Pat. What saddens me is, okay, after they score, they go on to dominate us for 5-10 minutes.
Yeah, but again, we've seen that before from this team. You could talk about it in the past, sure, but we've seen it this season multiple times. Where our heads just drop when we give up a goal, whether if it's we're leading and it's leveled or if we go 1-0 down. The fact that we had to praise the performance when we came back from 1-0 down recently shows you that, you know, we're not used to seeing this team pick their heads up when the cards are in our favor. And that, for me, is one of the bigger problems as well.
Yeah. No, I do agree with that. John, you see Elba shooting over from a Xhaka corner. What really annoyed me is just afterwards, we're in possession, and honestly, everybody up top, you know, Mezet, Laka, Aubameyang, Mkhitaryan, they're all playing statues. Our movement up top was horrendous today and kind of sums up the season for me. You know, if you're not going to get good movement up top, then what hope has the midfield got?
Yeah, and it's I don't quite understand it, because when you've got Mkhitaryan and Ozil on the pitch, you know, you've got two very good creative players, and it's not like Lacazette and Aubameyang don't make good runs or good movement normally. So, look, I know it's difficult, and Brighton are defending deep, and they're sitting in there very rigid in their shape, and they're hard to move. They're good at that. But you've got to move them about to try and create the space, and you've got to move the ball faster as well. We moved it so slow today. I actually thought Lacazette was good today. I didn't think he had a bad game, and Aubameyang was good, like in patches, but then, you know, had one miss in particular, which I'm sure we'll get to. But I sometimes get the impression that the players aren't quite sure where they're supposed to be playing at times, especially when Mkhitaryan and Ozil are on the pitch together, because they generally like to occupy the same space. They're both intelligent players who will look for where space is. And if one of them goes into it, then the other one doesn't exactly know where to go. Ozil is more of a get the player and then, you know, make the pass, whereas Mkhitaryan might want to carry it a bit. And I don't know, it just, nothing seemed quite cohesive today. Nothing was quite working. We really lacked any width without playing the wing-backs, because Ozil and Mkhitaryan are always generally going to come inside. You don't have that run on the outside to hit. You know, I know we started quite brightly and Nick Steiner and Monreal were getting forward, but as the game wore on, they weren't wide enough. And I think that's why you saw the changes that Emery made, because we just weren't getting anyone running in behind Brighton's defence at any point.
We've had this problem all season, haven't we? You know, this is not something that we haven't seen before. We've seen it on numerous occasions, and if we can see it, Unai can see it, and yet there's nothing coming forward to actually change anything, okay? You know, today's performance was an utter fucking embarrassment.
Embarrassment. You have to say that, and you can obviously excuse Emery to a certain extent, but today is an example of how this it's down to him again on the tactics board. If you know Brighton are going to sit back compact, yet you set yourself up to struggle to create with, you literally played right into their hands. And that's, again, the only times they were really struggling to defend were balls through the box from out wide, when we actually created a lot of the width through. Even Iwobi put in a couple of really good balls through, and they struggled. They got through nearly got to Aubameyang on that half volley if it wasn't nicked. That's the issue. And yeah, I don't necessarily.
There's no runners coming in to back that up, is there?
So the movement is poor when the service comes in. I agree with that. But then you could also say, do we really lack players who can give us width? I don't think so. I thought, we did actually very, very good today on the right, stretching the back four. So is it really a personnel issue, or is it a manager issue in terms of how he wants to play? There's been too many times where he's actively chosen to ask our width to come from the fullbacks and not from other players. And that's the problem. So.
Yeah. Duke, I'm sticking to you in this, actually.
Yeah.
You see Aubameyang miss a gilt-edged chance from a Mkhitaryan cross where he goes to scissors kick it. Now, I didn't see the replay on it, unfortunately. Did he have to scissors kick that, or was...
I think he opted to, because the ball was fizzled in at a pace where if he tries to knock it down, he might not control it properly enough. So I think he opts for the volley for that particular reason. I do think, however, if he does bring it down and he does control it well, he then has the option to either try to round the player, maybe get a call, or just open himself up, or if he can just hit it on the half volley once he settles it. It's difficult. I don't think anyone here could probably have taken the chance any better, obviously.
Yeah.
But you do though think there were free chance in the area late on. You expect him to at least maybe try to hit the target. But I don't think our match fell on his shoulders for that chance, though. I don't think you can say that. I think it's a difficult chance that it nearly did take, but I do think you expect better. But I expect better from other chances we had, and I think you guys just mentioned it before. Not just Mkhitaryan that led to the goal, but you've had multiple chances this match that presented themselves that we didn't take. We opted for the pass, where just on top of the box or just inside the box, we opt to try to pass it instead of going for goal, just because we don't think we have a clear path for the shot. I that's the part that I disagree with. I think we passed up three or four good chances. Torreira especially got into the box on two occasions that I can recall, and he opted to pass to lay it off to somebody else instead of shooting. And then you have the Mkhitaryan chance. So there's three right there. So again, I think today, and some of the people I was speaking to in a different chat mentioned that we overcomplicated matters today when the simplest option made the most sense, and that's something we've done historically for the last 5 to 10 years with this club, where it's all about trying to do something that maybe looks a little bit better in terms of the flow of play, where sometimes, and then I know the joke is there, but sometimes you just need to shoot more. And it's funny when we can banter about it, but sometimes you do have to just take the shot and hope. And we passed up chances today that could have led into some other goals. And when we did take the shots, we had good chances. Particularly from Mkhitaryan hits the post. He also tests Ryan in the first half as well from outside the area. So there were chances that we could have had that we didn't take. And I think it may fall on more of that than Aubameyang for sure.
That's a fair comment. Arsenio Wonga was our 80th like. Thank you, Arsenio. I've only got 82, though, people. What are you doing? Seriously now, what are you doing? We've got to go through this pain and hurt again, and you're just compounding it. You're just compounding it. You're being like Mesut Ozil, invisible. So let's keep on tapping, let's keep on going, and let's, get up to 100, please. We're not messing about, yeah? I've had enough today. Screenboy8 smashes in a donation, and he asks, how many signings do you think we need? Well, Screenboy8, we're going to ask that at the back end of the show with the questions. Thank you for the donation. You're an absolute star. Thank you ever so much. John, you get a Lacazette shot saved. That's some great skill from him knocking the ball over. It was a good drive from Mezet and across from Mkhitaryan. Then you get a Lacazette shot deflected. And then we get the Holy Trinity subbed on. Lichtsteiner, Xhaka, and Mkhitaryan off for Kolasinac, Iwobi, and Guendouzi. Was it all a bit too late by then?
I don't know if it's necessarily too late. I didn't mind the triple substitution. You've got to go for it at that point. It would have been nice to change it earlier. I think the issue he's got that he probably would have liked to have gone to the wing-back option earlier in the game, but because he hasn't got a right-back on the bench... he's either got to play, a midfielder out of position there, as he did with Iwobi, or he's got to play someone who's a little bit more defensive-minded and have it slightly lopsided. And, I don't know whether that would have been Guendouzi or Elneny, someone like that. So I think that's why it's left later for him to make that decision. I think it was the right one. You know, Jack was having a poor game. I think, you know, the crowd started to get on his back as well when you could see he was starting to suffer and he was making worse and worse decisions. Iwobi, we know, is good, carries the ball, he's very direct, something we've been screaming out for in the game. He's going to run at the Brighton players. Yes, his final ball isn't always the best, but he's going to cause problems. And we know Kolasinac is going to do the same thing, driving and just whip the ball across. And at that point, that kind of was our best chance, because even when we had done some nice play in the game, and there were spots within the game where I thought we did do some really nice moves and we did play very well, Matt Ryan was equal to it with some really, really good saves. So sometimes you have to sort of go back to basics, get to the byline and just swing it in or drive it along the ground as much as you can. And to be fair, the moment he did change it, although obviously they were breaking on us, and to be fair, they probably could have scored a couple of goals if they'd made some better passes. You know, we did start to cause more problems and the ball was getting into dangerous areas. And again, we just couldn't quite finish them off.
Quick shout out to Grumpy Gooner. He says, how do I donate? I am amazed that no matter the result, you dudes always here and you never miss a show. Grumpy Gooner, you don't need to. It's on Super Chat if you want to, mate. But you don't need to, genuinely. Thank you to everybody who's donated today and throughout the season. We really appreciate it. We made a promise to begin the season for last and begin the season. We will go live after each and every single competitive match. We will do the same next season as well. I'll say that here and now. No matter what happens, we're going to go live after every single competitive match.
Thank myself, God, there might only be 3 more games.
I genuinely can't fucking wait for the end of the season.
At least if it is 3 games, it could end on a very high note. So it'd be a nice way to start the summer off.
Let's hope it is 3 games, okay? Because if it's only 2 games, I'm going to lose my shit. But guys, for as much as, yeah, we come on here, we disagree with you, we moan, we are a reaction show, and we watch every game and we make sure we come on, but you guys are always in there, and that's what makes it worthwhile. You know, we get some new people, you know, you get people coming and going, but you know, this chat box is utterly magnificent, and without you, this doesn't happen. So, you know, you all deserve a massive round of applause, because, you know, we really do appreciate it. So thank you, each and every one of you who's been part of the chat box, especially, or listened after the fact. It doesn't really matter. You know, it's brilliant of you guys. So thank you ever so much. Drew, you see Iwobi, once he's on, he starts to deliver. Then you see Guendouzi get a stupid yellow. Something that's creeping into his game. He's trying to buy free kicks when he's not reading the referee, is he?
Yeah, but again, that's something we've seen from him before, where he'll go down and care about more either getting or not getting the call than playing to the whistle. It's such a silly yellow to take. If you don't hear the whistle, there's no reason to go grab the ball, because you're not guaranteed to get the call your way. It's just, I don't understand it. And there's nothing more to really be saying about it. I just don't understand it. And it's, for me, it shows that while I think he's done well to find himself a role in a team that is, on average, a much higher level than Lorient are, he's still a 19-year-old. He's still very, very raw. He still has a lot of developing to do, not just as a footballer, but from a maturity standpoint, because he has gone around during performances at a large swaths of the season, and you can tell that he's still somewhat petulant in a way. He still like moans and complains like you would when you're a teenager. And he hasn't, for me, he hasn't matured on that level yet. I think you have seen some development in his actual play over the course of the season. But for me, I just don't know if he's there. And I do think we gave him too much responsibility this year for someone who started very, very well. But just because a young player starts very well doesn't mean they're necessarily completely ready for the responsibility that you want to give them. So I do think that we overplayed our hand in that regard. But that said, I do still think he will develop into a good player. I do still think he has a lot of promise. We should obviously keep him at the club. People are saying we should sell him after one season. I think that's absolutely ridiculous. But there does need to be a different approach with him starting in the summer, moving into next season. And just because he's at the club doesn't mean that if we can't bring in a player who's first team completely ready, better than him this summer, doesn't mean we shouldn't do it if it's affordable. So,
absolutely agree. I think it's a big factor that He's come into the team. He's done very well, okay? But he's done very well for a 19-year-old. But the one aspect of his character, on the pitch has not developed at all. And I don't see it, you know, where Emery is or the coaching staff in helping to develop that. Because, you know, thoughts of selling him are ludicrous in my eyes. I think he could have a really big future with us. But, you know, he has to wise up in a way. John, you get Bissouma shooting over. There was a challenge from behind it on that move. Mustafi goes straight for Taylor, gets a yellow card. I think it was Gross who made the foul. He was right in front of the referee. It just summed up the game for us, didn't it? We were getting really bitty.
Yeah, I mean, from the moment we conceded the goal, we looked nervy, edgy. At the end of the first half, there was a few sort of little flare-ups and arguments. And something that I think has been better this season than in previous is that we haven't been drawn into this sort of kind of, you know, getting baited by other teams almost as much. But I think it's just, it's that game, the players know how much it means and how important it is. And you could see at the end of the final whistle, the sort of their reaction to the result, and it just tempers flared. And that's, you know, why these sort of things start to happen in the game. It's annoying and frustrating. And again, it comes into questioning the character or mentality, I don't know, of some of the players. I think sometimes, you know, we've said, or I've said a few times, that the easiest way or the only way I can explain our difference in a way to home performance is got to be partly down to the mentality of the players. I do think they can be got at, you know, so.
Just a quick shout out to TL Strength and Conditioning. TL, how are you? You're obviously a spud. It's really, really good to see you in a chat box adding to our numbers. We appreciate that. In your finest season ever, you've lost 19 games. Yesterday, you were a bit pathetic, weren't you? How sad are you that you've got to come into our chat box for your shits and giggles? Obviously, you've got no mates. It must be sad for you. So I'll leave you with this thought. Go fuck yourself, you wankstein. Take care. Good night. Adios. Oh, I feel better already. I tell you what, again, this show's really therapeutic. Drew, you then see Brighton, how they missed, how Gross missed the empty net. I have no idea. You see Leno make it just save from, I don't know who came in the back post. Really good save from Leno, who played well again today. The ball comes across and Gross just kind of fires over. What the hell was going on there? We should have been 2-1 down.
We should have, and we got let off by a player who kind of struggled. He's not a primary goal scorer. He wasn't when he was at Ingolstadt, so I'm almost not surprised he necessarily missed the chance. However, you do think that any decent footballer might actually at least hit the target with that. But with that said, Leno bails us out. You know, the chance ever comes if Leno doesn't make the first save in the first place, and I think it shows kind of what you'll get with Leno. He's a brilliant shot stopper. No one can ever take that away from him. You know, he's made some fantastic saves throughout the course of the season, and he's shown confidence in doing so. But for me, you did see it in some points of this game where, again, he does struggle to command the area. He does struggle when teams put balls into the box. He does struggle to communicate consistently with marking assignments for the defense, and, you know, dealing with set pieces. That for me is my only issue with him, and it's been my issue with him. I think we did well to get him for the money we got, but I think today is what you'll see from him for the entire forever, however long he's at the club. You're going to get a brilliant shot stopper that does have some flaws, but at the end of the day, he's still a brilliant shot stopper. So we have to hope that in the end, if we can sort out the defensive mess at the back, then he'll be excellent. People like to talk about his clean sheet, right, at Leverkusen, and that was all well and good, but Leverkusen were much more well-drilled at the back than we are, and that's why he got clean sheets. He can't save everything, and we can't expect him to. So we can applaud him, but the fact that Gross had all that space at the back post is the issue as well. He shouldn't have ghosted in. And again, we've seen that time and again where players are so enamored with what's going on with the save and the initial chance that they completely forget their marking assignments, place, Ghost back post in. They the first to rebounds, that is the bigger issue. So Leno's done well, but everyone's got to be on the same page with the back, including the goalkeeper, and that's maybe the downside.
Yeah, he defends the unit at the back, didn't you? Yep. Guys, in relation to the chat box, in relation to the spud who was in the box, yeah, have a pop, but then blah, blah, blah. But guys, in exactly the same way, we don't bring race or anything else into it. We don't bring religion into it either, please. Okay? We get annoyed now and again if somebody says something stupid. Okay, but we keep that out of it, please. Okay, it's not acceptable. Okay, right. The Gooners podcast have smashed in the donation, and they basically said it's a down payment on John Welsh's appearance on the Gooners podcast. Good luck, John. Good luck.
I know. I've been dodging him for weeks. It's terrible. No, you guys, I'm joking.
I was on the other day. It's good fun, to be fair. It's always good to see it. To the person who's just apologised in there, thank you for the apology. That's great. Appreciate that, guys. You know, I don't. You know, it's just we keep all that out of it. We have a crack at people for being idiots, and you can call them whatever you want. You know, but you know, we just keep it out. So thank you for that. Appreciate it. John, we get Aubameyang missing a call across. He just wasn't far from the header. Ryan saving from Lacazette. And Dunk, snuffing out a good cross. And that was the game, wasn't it? That was just the game. It was just a bag of wank.
Yeah, it was disappointing because we started so well and I thought we looked really up for it. And looked like we started the game with the right attitude. You get the early goal. Yes, there's luck in the penalty because I did think it was soft. But, you know, we took it and I thought from there we'd go on, get the second goal, and then that would be it. And we could kind of relax, you know, sub some players off so they're rested for Valencia, all that kind of thing. And it didn't go that way. Credit Brighton. You know, I thought they defended really well. Yeah. Matt Ryan was superb. You can see why. There's some bigger clubs looking at Lewis Dunk as well. He looks a very good centre-back. I thought Bissouma as well in midfield for them had a really, really good game. It was quite impressive. So I think they played their part. They deserve the point. We didn't help ourselves. And I think, like Drew said, you know, the way we set up from the start of the game was probably the biggest issue.
Absolutely agree. Drew, your... final thoughts on the game?
I mean, ultimately, the majority of the time, usually the score tells the what the match deserved. I think, I said it before, we did enough to get a win, but again, we also allowed too many quality chances to Brighton. And to be fair, not even just the ghost miss. If you look in the end, Andone screws two completely brilliant opportunities for Brighton to go on and win the game with two very poor balls into space. So we still could have easily lost again, but at that instance, you have to say we had to go for the win, and we knew we had to go for the win given the way the table looks. So Brighton was always going to get a chance on the counter. But at the end of the day, I think a draw is just about fair. Apart from maybe two or three other chances we had, bar the penalty, I don't think we really deserved to score more than the goal that we did. And you can argue that we didn't even deserve the penalty, obviously. And Brighton did well to claw back in, you know? So it's simple as that. You know, I think the result is fair, and given our form, if we were in better form in the league, I'd be more confident about winning the Europa League. But the fact that, you know, we have to play either a very difficult and well-drilled Eintracht Frankfurt side, or we have to play a Chelsea team who have been in brilliant form since we started to take the piss out of them, nothing is guaranteed at this point. We really have to hunker down moving forward, and we have to get a result in midweek and use that to you know, go on and try to win Europa League, because I don't think we're going to make up the goal difference against Spurs in the league. I think it's impossible now. We're not going to score 8 goals against Burnley at Burnley. Not happening. Yep. So it's Europa League or bust, and the players have to turn up. It's that simple.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, Loki 73 puts in the box and he says, I said by Dunk and got slated in here. Well, you may be right, mate. You may be right. Maybe we should have bought Dunk because he looks a hell of a lot better than Socrates, to my mind.
Fans don't want it, though, do they? The fans want those exotic names. Someone said before, if Ryan Fraser had the name of East Bissouma and put in that end product that Ryan Frazier is doing, people would want Ryan Frazier. I think it's that simple. I think moving forward with this club, you have to look at the fact that there are very, very good players at lower Premier League sides that can actually improve us. But the fans don't want that. The fans want the Ibrahim Konates of the world, who they never heard of before this season and now think he's God's gift to defending. So it's just the nature of the fan base.
I think that's human nature, isn't it? And by the way, guys, the Pirate is in the chat box. Give the Pirate some grief. His team drew today, 2-2. So congratulate him. He didn't ship 6 goals in. He's a winner today. He's a winner. Jonathan Witkin, you're a star, mate. You're a star for being in that chat box. Thank you so much. Yeah, it's difficult when it comes to wanting players. You know, the difficulty is as well, you look at Dunk and Duffy in that Brighton defence. They are set up to defend. They know what they've got to do. When you're a defender at the Arsenal, you've got to drive forward, you've got to interact with play. It's a little bit different. He may well be perfect for us. You never know. Uh-huh. You never, never, ever know. You know, I mean, it's whenever you buy a player, you know, he might not settle at the club, he might not suit the style of play, etc. It's difficult. It is difficult. So, you know, we ifs and buts are pounds and pence, etc. We're going to go to some questions now. Guys, if you've got any more questions, pop them in the box. We're going to go through each and every one today because I've had a guts full after that. I really have. And when Chris Carpenter said, should I hide the sharp objects? Yes, Chris, you might have to. I'm feeling like that at the moment. I really am. I just can't believe what I've watched over the last few weeks. I cannot believe how this club has capitulated, how we've gone to awful, we played some awful teams and got humped, you know, and well, we're going to go, this is the, here we go, let's go straight to the questions. And this is from at TRENRY14 on Twitter. And he says, a Bergkamp went on, good luck, another bank holiday weekend ruined by the Arsenal. Who, if any, of this current crop of players would you keep? John, you first.
Well, we found out today that Danny Welbeck is definitely leaving. They confirmed that with the sort of little farewell bit of the stadium. So he's gone. Who would I keep? I mean, if it was a case of we can replace whoever, then out of this squad, I'd keep Torreira, Guendouzi, Lacazette, Aubameyang,
Hector,
Bellerin, I'd keep Rob Holding, I'd keep Leno. I'd probably keep Iwobi as well, because I think he's a decent squad player. That's probably about it. Like, it's not that. Like, I think the others are trash, but I just don't care if they stay or not. I think is more the sort of that's the feeling I have towards a lot of the players in the squad right now. Like, I have like no affection for them. I don't have a connection for them.
I'd keep Aaron Ramsey, but what the fuck do I know? You know what I mean? Yeah, what the fuck do I know? Drew, your thoughts.
It's tough because you have to look at it from two standpoints. What do I think the club should do and what the club are going to do based off of what Unai Emery wants to do? I would keep Oba and Laka. I would keep Iwobi because off the bench, he can play 3 or 4 different positions. He gives you some depth and he gives you some maneuverability in that regard. So I would keep him. I'd keep Maitland Niles. Obviously, Guendouzi. I'd keep Torreira. Bellerin, I would keep. I'd actually keep Kolasinac, and then Holding, Mavropanos, Leno, and I would keep Mustafi as the 3rd or 4th center back, but I don't think he should be starting. But I think, again, he gives you some depth and experience. But I do think if we're coming down to what I would do, I think we do need, you know, 3, 4, 5 players in who can walk into the 11. And I think it's clear now more than ever that we do need some upgrades. But a lot of our players are okay. People have to understand that just because you're a top 6 team doesn't mean every player in your squad is going to be a world-class player. There are 3 teams in the world that can afford that. You're going to have decent players in your squad that can do a job that are okay that will maybe start 5-6 matches a season, we're going to have to keep some of those players. But I do think we can upgrade. You know, at least we can upgrade on our left wing. We need a center back, and I think we do need to bring in a center midfield. I know people are talking about trying to upgrade on Kolasinac, but I think a bigger problem is how we're going to get goals from midfield when Ramsey's not in the team anymore, because we're not going to get it from Torre or Xhaka or Guendouzi or even Maitland Niles, really. So I do think we need those three positions should be looked at in summer, at least.
I'd also keep Chambers.
Yeah. Okay? Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah, and I tell you what, I'd like you, I'd keep Mustafi, but just to boil piss. Just to boil people's piss. That's all I do for it. All right, so we've had a couple of donations. Right, let's get into the... can you put them in the box, please, mate?
I'll read them out. We've got Michael Hanneman first. Big donation, thank you, Michael, as always. Europa League or bust, big love to Aaron Ramsey. The emotion on that lad's face during that lap, the lap of appreciation, what professional. Absolutely. If you haven't seen that, that will be all over Twitter. And Michael Hernandez, so both Michaels, donation smashed in there as well. I love the fact it's always, he does an odd number just to wind Danny up. Drew appreciation donation. So he's very pleased to see you back on the show, Drew.
Good. Thanks, Michael. Appreciate it.
Two top mics there. We think a lot of these guys. Right. Next question is from It's Not Just Cricket at Gunner Nerd on Twitter, and he says the big question is, do we waste another season of this manager after a pre-season and almost a season of games he still cannot set up the team? John, you first.
It's such a hard question, because look, I like some of the things Emery's done. I think he's done some really impressive things, and he's very proactive in the way he changes things during the game. I think the problem is that he's got too many things wrong a few too many times before games. It's hard to criticise him, because I think he has come into a very unbalanced squad that's quite old in a lot of places. But, but 4.18 is really bad. But then, obviously, you know, you see how we've done in the Europa League, although some of the away games have been a bit... But if we go to the final, we win it, that's amazing. I did not expect that in his first season, so it's so difficult. And the other thing is, if you get rid of Emery, the question is, who do you bring in? And also, if someone else comes in, are they going to come in with enough time to, you know, decide what style of play we're going to have? Are they going to have any money to spend? Is it not just going to be the same thing that, okay, we've got a new manager in and now he's got to deal with the squad and what state it's in? When it's just lost one of its best players in Aaron Ramsey, the team's a year older, and we don't have an actual director of football.
Whose fault's that?
You know, and I don't know what direction the club is currently going in. Like, are we going to start signing players based on the way Emery wants to play football, or are we going to get a director of football in eventually, who will essentially miss this summer window, and we'll go to their pattern of play and the way that director of football essentially wants a club to play, and we'll move away from Emery in a year's time or something and bring someone else in. So I think I'd give him the second year, you know, unless someone really exceptional comes up. But it doesn't, you know, it doesn't thrill me with excitement. But I don't think he's got an easy job either. You know, he's not going to be helped by the club in any way whatsoever.
Drew, your thoughts?
This one, I've toiled back and forth with this for a while. For me, I completely understand where John is coming from. I do think that he's come into a circumstance with the nature of the squad, and we were complaining about the squad imbalance in the final few years under Arsene Wenger, so obviously that hasn't changed. I think you do consider that, but what you do also have to look at, and there's now ample evidence, you know, to the contrary, it's that even though they have the luxury of spending a lot of money, you still see managers like Pep, like Klopp, like Conte. They came in and they nailed down their... At least you knew how they wanted to play, even if they still needed to get players in to play it the way they want to. You saw what they were going for, at least tactically. With Emery, no one has a clue what he's really going for. But you can't just say his style is he wants to press. Every modern manager presses. That's not anything different. How he wants to actually play football, how he wants us to set up, you know, what his real philosophy is, no one has a clue. And that's the problem. Everyone knew Klopp wanted to come in. He wanted to institute gegenpress. You know, he wanted to play a direct, incisive football. He wanted to go with 4-3-3. Everyone knew Pep wanted to do some variant of tiki-taka because he keeps evolving it. You have people like Brendan Rodgers who come in, and look how good Leicester's been. And they're playing Brendan Rodgers' brand of football. Hasenhüttl comes into Saints, and their performances have improved. You know, they have a consistent 11 now. He changed the shape a little bit. And Ross can tell you all about it, that the fans love what Hasenhüttl's done. You know, and now they have some sort of clear direction on the pitch where they're going for. We don't have that with Emery. And that, I think, is the biggest criticism with him. And for me, that's my biggest criticism, is that there's no clear identifiable way that anyone can point to and say, this is what Emery wants to do with this team. And if he needs 10 new players to do it, was Emery really the right man in the first place? Why didn't we go after a manager that would come in and look at the squad and say, I can play my brand of football with the squad from the start, and I don't need to spend £200 million to fix it? And there were managers out there that could have done it. Someone already brought up Yardim from Monaco would get more out of this team, because this team is made for a more technical style of football than maybe the graft and the hard work and whatnot. And if we have to go out and spend all that money to bring in graft and hard work directly, then you can maybe say, was Emery the right appointment to begin with? And some people do think that either Emery is a bridge manager until we find the long-term manager, or we went out and we panicked and just settled on Emery because who we actually really wanted is people who we couldn't get. So I'm not quite sure which direction we're going to go. And I think that's the biggest worry, is if by January of next season, after two preseasons and a season and a half, if there's still no direction from the manager, then you can say he's not the right man and he has to be let go. Don't go with the third option on his contract. Cut him after 2 years. But I do think he does deserve to get the second preseason. I do think he does deserve to get at least the first half of next season. I wouldn't sack him in the middle of the second season. But you could say if there's no improvement, then he has to go at the end of next year. If there's no clear identifiers of what we're going to be, then he has to go after next season for sure.
I take a slightly different view to you guys. I mean,
how dare you?
if he wins the Europa League, you've got to give him the second season, okay?
Sure.
You've got to give him the second season if he wins the Europa League. For me, looking back at our league campaign, I'd sack his ass now.
Interesting.
I think it's incumbent on any manager to get the best out of what you've got. Okay. Agreed. I think the way, you know, if you look at, take Mkhitaryan and Ozil for argument's sake, Ozil gets dropped for not working hard enough, for not doing this, for not doing that. Yet Mkhitaryan puts exactly the same sack of shit performances out and nothing happens to him. Okay, I think, you know, I mean, you're probably looking at Raul here more than anybody else, and Raul's got a lot to answer for between the Mislintat business, the Ramsey business, etc. I think there's a whole host of shit going on in the background where both parties were briefed against by the club. And, you know, all this thing about money, Ramsey was only after Mkhitaryan money. He wasn't after the money he's getting at Juventus. But, you know, it happened with Mislintat as well. And that I find kind of unacceptable. I don't like the way the club's going. But as for the manager himself, it's incumbent on you to get the best out of the squad you've got. And that's all I can tell you about this season, is doing this show. It's been dog shit performance after dog shit performance. Funny enough, the only time we really did look like playing good football and we were winning was when he brought, you know, I know we had the 22 game unbeaten run, but myself and John, who do most of these shows.
But that paper over the cracks, didn't it? Yeah. We weren't as good as the run suggested. And I've said that, and a lot of people have said it. So yeah. I agree with you guys there. Yeah.
And if you know, you look at some of the football we played, it was awful.
Yeah.
Awful. Okay. Then you brought Ramsey back in and you get go forward and we started playing good football. Now, yes, I'm a massive Ramsey fanboy, but that type of player was needed. We had a window in the winter within which to bring in loan signings. We bring in Denis Suarez. There were other players available. Tielemans goes to
last thing.
You know, it's just, I don't see where we're heading. The lack of identity worries me. The lack of getting plan A right worries me. So I'd sack his ass right now. But if he wins the Europa League, he deserves the chance to go forward. So, right, let us move on from that, okay? Oh, God, I've lost where I am now. Right. Oh, don't. Okay, I'm as bad as the Arsenal. Sorry. How many likes we got, John?
We're over 115, I think. I just got a refreshing page.
Okay, chat box, 130, please. Chop, chop. Tappy, tappy. Let's get going.
Oh, well,
we've John, this question.
121, because we've got six downvotes, so they count.
No. 130 likes, please. I love the downvotes as well. We've been annoying somebody somewhere, which really I really enjoy. John, this one's for you. Loki73 asks, after six losses out of eight, can we question the manager yet, or is it NPC?
No, we can question the manager. I think if you... Right, so if you put something on Twitter, most people will probably say, yeah, it's pretty reasonable, and maybe you have a nice discussion. You're always going to get an idiot, because it's the internet. That's what happens. But also, I think it's because we have come from a club, from being a club that had the same manager for 20-odd years, and questioning or bringing up sacking a manager is so taboo to Arsenal fans. Because it's not what we do. We look at Chelsea and go, well, no, that's something Chelsea do. They have a manager for a year, and even if he wins the FA Cup, they still sack him. You know, you win the Champions League, you get the sack. That's not what Arsenal do. That's not in our values. It's that, I mean, it's fine having that opinion. I don't necessarily disagree with it, but that's not what the club is anymore. A lot of those old custodians are gone now. We're owned by someone totally different, and modern football is a very different thing. You know, if Emery does stay and wins the Europa League or whatever, I'd be surprised if he lasted more than 3 years at the club, regardless of how well he did, just because it's modern football. So, no, I think you're perfectly within your rights as a fan to question, you know, whether he should be the manager or not, especially after the run, you know, that we've had.
I don't think it's just that. I think so many fans hounded Wenger out. Not that the club listened to the fans, but they wanted Wenger to go so badly. And now I think they're hesitant to question Emery because they're going to look and say, well, I wanted this change, and now look what I've gotten.
Yeah.
I don't think they want to hold their hands up and say, you know, we got the appointment wrong. I think that's one of the other things as well. And a lot of people during the unbeaten run were saying, oh, you know, my manager, look at Emery, et cetera. Yeah. And now things are in the fucking toilet, and now they don't want to admit that, you know, perhaps I overestimated how well we really played. And like we said before, the unbeaten run absolutely papered over the cracks. And without that unbeaten run, we wouldn't even be finishing sixth right now. We would be finishing sixth without that unbeaten run, but we'd be further away from Champions League without it. And we got lucky in quite a few of those performances, and you could say that you need luck during the course of the season. Even the best teams get lucky performances, true. But when you could say maybe a good third of that unbeaten run was lucky performances, it's not luck anymore. You know, it's something a little bit different at that point. So I do think it's right to criticize the manager. The fans that want him gone, I don't fault them for that. I do think maybe a little bit more patience is required. I do think he should get 2 years. But I can understand why you'd want him gone now, and I think you guys are absolutely correct. On the strength of the actual league performance, I don't think he's earned that second season. I think we've seen our defense is as bad or worse than last year, which is saying something. You know, we're still scoring the same amount of goals, but we look as disjointed as ever, and that has to fall on the manager and large portions of it. So,
it's funny, you know, we've criticized Unai from day one, I suppose. You know, I mean, he's... You give him credit when it's due, and you criticize him when it's due. It's one of those things, you know, as a reaction show, we have to be honest about what we've seen and how we feel about the situation. You know, it's difficult. Let's be honest, okay, in defense of Unai Emery here, okay, managing any Premier League club is not easy. Mm-hmm. It's not easy. You know, if we could all do it, we'd all have a go at it. But we can't, so we don't. But, you know, I think there's something in between sort of being constructive and giving an argument-based criticism rather than just saying, you know, like it was with Arsene, where it had become a personality thing. And I think let's not make it a personality thing. You know, we all take the mickey and stuff at times and we all say stupid things, but... Let's keep it in the football. Drew, this one's for you. It's also from Loki73. What does a world-class game-changing Ozil do? Please tell me.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Of course you guys are asking this. Oh, dear. Okay, well, here's the first thing. I think that people have to understand now that Ozil is not... He's no longer the player that you saw at Real Madrid. And I don't think it even has anything to do with the fact that he was playing for Real Madrid and now he's playing for Arsenal. Some players hit their peak and then they rapidly decline. I think Ozil is actually in this decline and it's happening earlier and on in his career than when someone turns 35. I don't think he has that longevity as a player. It's not that he's not technically fantastic. It's not that he doesn't have an ability to pick a pass that literally no one else on the pitch can do, because he has all of that. But I just don't think that Mesut Ozil is the same Mesut Ozil anymore. I think he's in his decline as a player. And I think this is where someone else, like maybe a David Silva, trumps him because of his longevity. But I just don't see it anymore. And I don't think it helps that I don't think we're playing the right way for Ozil to completely shine. I think that has something to do with it. But I think it's more on just the player himself. I think he's just in his decline now. And I think that's kind of where it begins and ends. So what a world-class Mesut Ozil would have done if this was, say, 5 or 6 years ago, is when you, and then you can look back and say, when you saw him at Real Madrid, he would pick the ball, but he would run 30, 40, 50 yards and pick a perfect pass, or he'd pick the perfect pass from 50 yards away. He was more, his decision making was faster. I think he does dolly on the ball more now than I've ever seen him done before. He certainly never did it often at Real Madrid. He was certainly more direct and incisive with Germany in his pump. And I think now you just see a player who, He's just not as quick as he used to be, mentally for sure, in his decision making. I think that, but that's also something you can say about every player at the club. We don't make decisions fast enough. But I just do think that simply, I think he's declining now. I think that's kind of it.
Do you think, you know, look, I look at today, and whereas, you know, they're stacked up with their two banks of four, he should be patrolling in between the lines, jotting in and out. Because he has no runners, I think he just gets fed up and just says, well,
yeah,
it's pointless me being there. So, you know, because even if I do get on the ball, there's nobody coming off me to lay off to move. You think that's fair?
No, I think it's fair. I do, and that's something I've also said, is that you could say, if you look back at his time at Real Madrid, he did have those runners ahead of him. He had Ronaldo, he had Di Maria, he had, you know, Benzema, who does like to make forward runs, and he does have those options available ahead of him. When you're, and the other thing is, when you're playing in a league where teams are so, they regularly set up with two banks of back four and sit and defend in a bunker, you don't really get that in the Liga. You don't get that in the Bundesliga. You don't get that in, you know, Ligue 1. You have, there's a different approach to defending here that a lot of players, maybe if they don't deal with on a regular basis, they'll struggle a little bit. But I agree, tactically, we don't do him favors because we don't get him those runners where he can provide. And I still think when you still get them from him, when we do have players who want to make those runs on any given Saturday or Sunday or Thursday, he will pick the pass. But yeah, there's also a lot of times where I do think he does need to put his stamp on the match where he doesn't. But there are also times where I do think he does put his stamp on the match. But that's the thing. I do think that he's no longer consistently that player who will do it week in, week out. And it's no slight on the player, because I absolutely love Mesut Ozil, and you guys know that. Yeah. But I do think you have to be realistic about the fact that players do decline as well. And tactically, we do make it difficult for him sometimes. But there are moments even where I've gotten frustrated with him this season where I do think he could have done more to really try to drive us forward, and he hasn't. But then there are also circumstances where you say this isn't his fault at all. I don't think any of us are scapegoating Ozil, because I know someone mentioned it in the chat box. I don't think we're scapegoating. It's like we're saying, you know, I think this is leading to, should we keep him on moving forward? I would keep him, but the only problem is he has to do way more than what he's done when he's on the money he's on. And again, that's not his fault, obviously, but you do expect more.
Yeah, absolutely. John, my Uncle Nagendran asks, how wrong was the timing of the subs on a scale of bananas on pizza to lemon-flavoured beer? I don't think you've got an out to you, mate.
I don't know what's worse.
Bananas on pizza is far worse.
Bananas on pizza is definitely worse. I mean, it's like I said earlier, I'm not sure. The only way he could do it slightly differently is if he doesn't make the triple substitution all at once. The moment he brings on Kolasinac, he has to switch to some sort of wing-back play, and it means that he's forcing someone out of position on the right-hand side. And I don't know who, you know, it was Iwobi in the end, but you, at that point, you have to say, right, we're just throwing everything at it. He maybe could have changed, I don't know, Xhaka earlier and, you know, stuck Iwobi on then before he brings on Kolasinac and Guendouzi. I think on the balance, Emery's probably got it right more times than he's got it wrong with his subs. The problem that I have is that when he's got it wrong with his subs this season, he's got it horribly wrong to the point where it's cost us games or points.
Well, out-tacticked by Chris Heaton as a badge of honour he can take forward. That's all I'm going to say. Drew Thomas from Norway asks, could Emery be focusing 100% on the Europa League?
Could he be? In terms of how we've performed? I think you can't just blame him. I think the players probably have an eye on it because it's our first chance at a European trophy in a long time.
Since so, last season's semi-final.
Yeah, no, I mean, well, in fair, but you have to say that you would give us a 50-50 shot, a legitimate shot at winning it if we make the final, whereas maybe last season you wouldn't give us that same odds. I think the players have an eye on it. I think the manager, maybe he does. But I still think that I've always maintained that our best route into Champions League, I still think, would have been the league. And this shows it. The teams around us will drop points in the Premier League. But unfortunately, when we had the chance to take it forward, we also bottled it and dropped points. So I really do think that the onus has always been on us. But you do think that we look better in Europa League than we do in the league. So you can maybe then ask, maybe he does have an eye on it, and maybe it's the competition he knows. For all we know, maybe Emery was brought in for the specific reason of winning Europa League so we could get into Champions League. Maybe he wasn't really even supposed to finish top four. We don't know what the clubs told him, so it's hard for us to really judge. But you do see that he does know how to navigate that competition. The question is, how will he navigate Champions League even if we get it? A little bit of a different animal. Than the Europa League. So I do think, again, he does shoulder some of the responsibility for how things have transpired over the last 2 months, but the players have to look at themselves as well. It's not just the manager. So, yeah.
Agreed, but ultimately it's managers who lose their jobs, isn't it?
You know, yes.
It's the bottom line nowadays. I'm going to take this next one. Paul Simpson asks, this still isn't Unai Emery's squad. No backing in January. We still have a chance of Europa League Champions League qualification. The problem I have with that, Paul, is when any new manager comes in, it's not their squad, yet they're expected to deal with it. Okay, he hasn't had the best at this squad, right? And that's bottom line. He's on a 2-year contract. It's never going to be fully his squad. This is a squad that got to Europa League semi-finals last year, and if it wasn't for Cause's brain fart, would probably have got to the final and we'd have humped Marseille. If it wasn't for that one moment in the game, there were loads of missed chances as well. Don't get me wrong. You know, you've got to have a pop at sort of our forwards last season against Atletico as well, because we should have been 3 or 4 nil up. But ultimately, that's the way it is. You know, giving him, you know, saying, oh, he's going to have 6 or 7 transfer windows just doesn't work. This club can't go backwards for 6 or 7 transfer windows. Ultimately, he has to make the best of what he got. You know, what was Ivan's words? Or he came in with detailed dossiers and all the players. So apparently, coming into the interview process, he knew about all the players, yet he still hasn't been able to get the best of them. 4 points out of 18, we've played Leicester, Palace home, Wolves, Everton, Brighton today. Brighton are 17th in the league, and have struggled to score all season, yet managed to score against us. You know, you can make excuses for him. And like I said, it's not, you know, this is not an easy job. But ultimately, he carries the can. End of story. John, Loki73 has been smashing questions in here today. If Manuwa finish above us in the league and we don't win the Europa Cup, we will have to play qualifiers in July. What are your thoughts on that? That's going to add to the happiness, isn't it?
Oh, God. Is that how that works? So hang on, if they finish above us, I'm not sure if we do have to play qualifiers because of the league we're in. We might not have to. I'd have to double check. If Loki's right, Loki might be right, and then maybe he's already looked at it. If we do have to play qualifiers in July, that's really bad. But we should be able to get through. But it doesn't help with the summer preparation in any way whatsoever. It just adds more games and more time into legs, you know, that they don't need. Look, I hope that we can get a result against Burnley and, you know, stay above United at least. So, yeah, I don't want to think about that, for fuck's sake.
I was going to give you a good one. Drew, Payesh Kapoor says, despite getting a lot of opportunities to get into the top four, it is now safe to say AFC are this season's biggest bottlers. Also, with his poor performance, I don't think we will win Europa Cup. Do you agree with him?
I don't know, I forget, was it 15 or 20 minutes ago I mentioned that we always throughout the course of this entire season took the absolute piss out of Spurs and Chelsea, and now look at us now.
Yeah.
Going in to the final match of the season, we're on the worst form of any of the top six clubs. United's only picked up one extra point because they have an additional draw or we have a loss. But other than that, you know, Liverpool and City have been immaculate. Chelsea's been in much improved form. Spurs are Spurs. They win or they lose. But our form has been absolutely dreadful. So you'd have to say yes. And again, you could forgive it if we were losing against teams. Maybe we should be losing to or dropping points against teams we were dropping points to. But again, you know, you're dropping points to Crystal Palace when you're at the Emirates. You know, you're getting played off the park by Wolves and Leicester in large parts of the match. You know, you're struggling against Brighton, who barely survived the drop. I think that's where we need to hold our heads down and say, you know, yeah, we absolutely bottled the chances. And for a team that scores 70 goals, you know, the fact that we're going to be in fifth because at the back we're so poor and just woefully inconsistent over the entire course of the season, I think, yeah, you have to look at it and say that we are probably the biggest bottlers. And it can have an adverse effect on our Europa League campaign, but I do think that if we go out and go to Valencia and put in a really good consummate performance, you would say that we have a 50-50 chance of beating Chelsea in a one-off because it's a one-off. I think if it was a two-legged affair, I think Chelsea would beat us because I don't think we'd slap Chelsea around at the Emirates. I think Chelsea would absolutely get the result at Stamford Bridge, but it's neutral ground. It's a one-off. We have an absolute chance to do it. So, I mean, again, it's Europa League or bust. If we don't win Europa League and we end up finishing fifth, then again, it's going to be really hard for Unai to keep the backing of a lot of the fan base next season if things don't go well at the start. And if player recruitment doesn't go well, doesn't any number of things that could make more fans turn on the manager in very short order, depending in the next 3 months. So again, it's imperative we win the competition. Now there's no making the final isn't good enough. We have to win it. Everything I think depends on it. So
agreed. John, Screenboy 8, when he donated early on, he asked, how many signings do you think we need?
25.
Well, okay, I mean, just off the top of my head, I think we need a midfielder. We need some sort of wide forward, you know, whether it's an out and out winger, you know, someone with some pace, basically. I do think we need a centre back. I'm not that displeased with Maitland-Niles at right back. But the problem is that, you know, once Bellerin's fit again, I think it's his position and Maitland-Niles probably doesn't play anymore. So maybe you need some competition as an out-and-out right-back there. I do think we need another left-back to challenge Kolasinac. That's less of an issue at the moment right now. I think centre-mid is the big one. I still don't think that position is necessarily solved. You have to find a way. We have to find someone else who can score goals who's not a striker, basically, because Ramsey's gone. You know, Welbeck, who will play, he doesn't score a lot of goals, but he plays a lot of positions, is gone. And other than Aubameyang and Lacazette, you don't see anyone else in the team scoring goals regularly. So you need to find another, you know, 15 goals somewhere in this, you know, from one player in a squad, and I don't think we've got that.
Okay. I'd add in two central midfielders, to be honest with you. I think we need competition there. you know, so you need to get it around the NA as well, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, there's the how many get promoted from, you know, does Joe Woodick step up or does he go on loan, all that kind of thing. You know, if you get a right back, does Maitland-Niles then get a chance in the middle rather than out wide? So there are different ways around it. I just, we obviously haven't got that much money to spend, especially if we don't get this league. So
yeah, I got to be honest with you. A mate of mine made his debut for Fleetwood Town yesterday. So massive shout out to Macaulay Southam, the absolute rock star. He was a Cardiff under 23s. And the one thing he said is he should have gone out on loan. He should have gone out on loan to play adult football. So with the likes of Joe Willock, etc., I think, you know, get him out on loan, get him good loans for a season and let them, you know, man up out in the big wide world would be more beneficial. And that's one thing Macaulay said. I'm going to try to get Macaulay onto a podcast soon.
Cool.
Unfortunately, he's a bin dipper.
Well, nobody's perfect.
He's a good boy, though. He's a good boy, and he's my mate, so chat box, be kind to him. Drew, my Uncle McGendron asks, should we keep Xhaka next season? I think we need to bring in more quality in midfield. Doubt we can handle it, the churn if he leaves too.
It's the age-old question. We were talking about Xhaka for ABW when we first bought him, and I said I don't think we should have bought him, and it's not because he's not a decent player. It's not because he can't be a much better player. For me, we do miss him when he doesn't play. He does give us that creativity from Deeper that we lack when he's not in the 11, but I think the problem is when things aren't going our way, Xhaka off the ball is so poor. I think the game is at the point where your center midfielders need to be mobile, and I think that's where the issue comes in, and John can speak to it as well. That's where he struggled at Gladbach. He had a mobile partner in Dahoud, but he would always get exposed because, you know, they didn't have cover for him in the defensive midfielder. You know, the wingbacks are pushing forward at Gladbach because they played three at the back regularly. So if he got beat, he was absolutely roasted and there's nothing he could do about it. And I think if you want a creative presence in center mid, that's what we need. But I think it has to be a mobile one. So I wouldn't actively sell him. But if the right bid came along for him, then I would sell him. If someone rocked up tomorrow and offered us 45 men for Granit Xhaka, I'd bite your hand off for it and take it without thinking twice. But I wouldn't also actively push him out of the door either because there's no guarantee we'll get the right midfielder in who can be creative from deeper. But I do think I would agree with you guys. However, though, I think getting another center midfielder in is important. If you do get the other center midfielder in, then what happens with Granit Xhaka? Because we don't play three midfielders. So say we do go on and replace Aaron Ramsey and we get a midfielder who can give us the goals that we're going to be missing from midfield. What happens to Xhaka? What happens to Torreira? Does Torreira be the one to come off the bench when we need to shore things up? Or does Torreira start with the new partner and Xhaka comes in when maybe the circumstances of the match suit him? Or do we shift approach completely and play with three midfielders? There's a lot of questions to answer based off of the business we do in the summer. But there are better than him out there, but we don't have to force him out of the club either. But we can also improve on them if we get the opportunity to, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's... It's a real sticky situation that... I'm going to take the next one. Grant Wilborn asks, how many players do you realistically will move on this summer and how many are we going to bring in? Well, this is the difficulty. I mean, for me, I'd move Mkhitaryan on and try to do a player plus cash deal for a winger. Okay? Yeah, that sort of thing with him. You know, get him off the wage bill, get him gone. You're not going to be able to move Mesut Ozil on because of his wages.
That's a little long ago. So,
yeah. Mustafi, I genuinely think, you know, I don't buy all the Mustafi hate. I think as a player in there, I don't think he's going to get coached here well enough. And I think it's best for both parties for him to move on because he's just done. So, again, you know, if Skriniar, you know, can you go to De Milan and say, look, here's 40 million quid and Mustafi for Skriniar? You know, that's quite good. So, you know, I can only see two or three going. You'll see Elneny going, maybe Mkhitaryan, Mustafi. I'm not sure about anybody else. You know, I'd happily get rid of Socrates and get a better centre-back. I'm not sold on him whatsoever. Nacho may go because of his age. I don't think we can afford to lose Koscielny at the moment. He's been our top-performing centre-back this season. You know, by a mile, and he's only played a short part of the season. So those are the outs for me. Ings, you're getting Chambers back from Fulham. I'd stick with him. But you'd have to get some, you know, a really good quality centre back in to match up with those guys. And two, if you're letting Mustafi and Sokratis go. I think we do need a wide player, but that would be with the Mkhitaryan deal. And I think you need two good quality centre and midfielders. How it's going to pan out may be totally different from that. But those are the sensible moves I see happening. You know, but guys, have you got anything to add to that?
Yeah, you first.
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree for the most part with the ones who would leave. The Chambers one is weird. It didn't make any sense. You know, Emery was talking about him quite highly before that loan move came through. In terms of the players we're getting in, I've got no idea. Just because it does really hinge on whether we've got Champions League football or not, because that extra money is massive. And yeah, I agree with you, Jace, that I think they would probably move on Ozil as well. But because of his wages, it's going to be near impossible unless they manage to agree, they're paying a percentage of his wage at the next club he goes to or something for however many years he's got left on that contract.
Do?
I would agree again. I do think that I'm with you on Mustafi. I think that there's a player there who we can rely on, not as in the first choice pairing, but he's a decent third or fourth option and in your center back pool. There's no reason to move him on, but I think it's certainly clear if we don't get Champions League, unfortunately, I do think we're going to have to sell before we can buy. And I think this is where we're going to miss out on someone like Mislintat, because he would have found us the best deals to sell. I mean, he would have found us players for lower fees to bring in that would have improved us, like a Lucas Torreira, who isn't even on, I think we see on 60K a week, and we got him for £26 million. And look how well he's done in his first year.
Yeah.
Do you really think Raul Stanieri is going to be able to bring in those types of players? I don't think so, because if you look up his entire track record with Barca, I think he's a contacts-based sort of, you know, COO, where he'll ring up, you know, Mina Raiola and ask if any of his players are available and for how much they're going to cost and can we afford it. I don't think that's the kind of recruitment that's going to put us back in good standing with, in terms of trying that genuinely challenge for a top four place regularly and get us back in Champions League. So when people talk about selling the likes of Lacazette or Aubameyang, I don't think it's because they want them gone. I think it's because we can get the most value for them and we have to sell if we want to really spend. So we want to make four signings types of, like, that's like Torreira. So four players that are between 25 and 30 million pounds. We have to spend 120 million pounds, and it's becoming more and more evident we don't have that much money to spend this summer. So somebody big has to go if we're going to want to actually try to start to revamp the squad. That's the issue. So if Mustafi goes, I think it's for that reason. And if Mustafi does go, then we either have to find a really good gem on the market for cheap, or we have to put faith in someone like Chambers to come back in and do a job. We have to hope Holding comes back in and doesn't have any adverse effect from his injury. Mavropanos, who needs to be loaned, might not be able to be loaned because we need that depth at center back. There's a host of problems that the transfer window can present us, and we're not even talking about it yet, and that's the biggest thing. But I do think we need to sell before we can spend, and I think that's, and I don't think we currently have the structure in place above management level for us to do it and navigate it correctly and us to get it right. So
it's going to be interesting, isn't it? It's going to be really, really interesting. Yeah. John, question for you. Alonzo Spencer asks, who do we play on Thursday and which formation?
Definitely goes three at the back again. I would go with Nacho. Oh, would I play Nacho? I'm already questioning it. Right, Koz, Kolasinic, Maitland-Niles, and then it's either Mustafi or Nacho, I'm not sure. and then in midfield, Xhaka was awful today, but I still think I'd play him. It'd probably be him and Torreira. I don't think I'd play Ozil. I'd start with Lacazette up front and have Aubameyang on the bench, and I'd probably start Mkhitaryan and Iwobi, and have Aubameyang to bring on. That's what I think I'd go with. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Drew, Junior Gunner asks, no knee-jerk reaction. Is this Arsenal side the worst in the top eight? I'm looking at Wolves and Everton. We are toothless up front in terms of creativity. Also have half wits in Mustafi, Mavropano, Monreal, etc. We give both sides of the coin here, don't we? We've got to give both sides of the coin. And Junior Gunner's a top man.
I think on paper, our squad is better than Wolves and Everton, but I think the squads are better balanced, and they have managers that are playing brands of football that suit their squads. I think that's why they went out and got results against us, and I think that's it. But the thing you can now question is if you can look in both Everton and Wolves and their first teams and find players that can walk right into our best 11 right now. That's the other problem, that we're not really giving us our best chance to get a really good squad because we're not looking where we should be looking. So I don't think our squad, on paper, our squad is not the worst of the top eight, but in terms of match with the manager and in terms of consistency and in terms of balance and fit, I think then it actually is overall.
Okay, cool. John, Arsenio Wonga asks, I'm going to answer the second part of the question first before you answer the first part, okay? Who realistically is available in the transfer market that we could sign? And number two, which I'll ask, who would you actually want to come and play for us? Come play for us and play for the badge and not the money? I think the days of playing for the badge are gone with a lot of people. Unless you come through the actual youth system, you don't get many players. You know, you've got to be lucky in finding a guy who actually, you know, when he gets to the club, will love the club, etc. Like, I think Aaron Ramsey was a Liverpool fan when we signed him. Well, he's been at the club so long, he made friends, he grew to love the club. You know, a bit like Chesney, etc. So unless you're picking them up young, I think it's a case of they're here for the cash. But I would chuck in Dan James from Swansea because gas scares defenders. John, go.
I mean, anyone's available if you have the money. That's it, simply put. We're not going to go and sign anyone like big-name player. You know, there's no point in looking at... I saw people talking about Ousmane Dembele from Barcelona.
Or Titi and the like.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'd love to sign them, but we haven't got that sort of money. It's just not going to happen. Unless, you know, Barcelona really do want to sign Lacazette, which I don't think that's true, to be perfectly honest. I love Lacazette, but I don't think they're realistically interested in him. Then maybe you could do some cash plus player or something. So you're looking at more... the middle tier. Someone brought up earlier in the chat, I don't know who it was, apologies, but Guna Podcast brought it up in a question later, so I won't say it now, but maybe look into Premier League ready players is one thing that we never really do. Looking into the Championship, losing Mislintat is huge because we're not going to, you know, like Drew already said, Raul Sanyehi isn't going to know, you know, the Lucas Torreira type players who are 20 million quid that are very good players, have got promise, you know, can be developed. Maybe if in the long run, if they don't quite work out, we're at least going to make a profit on them. They're the sort of tier of players that I'd be looking at. And I'm sure there's plenty of those around. I mean, I guess we could do what everyone else is going to do and try and buy everyone from Ajax.
Yeah, but we can't compete with those clubs, can we?
Yeah, that's the problem, yeah. We're never going to compete with Barca and no. Those big boys. A lot of the Premier League teams you're not going to compete with. You're never going to compete with City if there's a player they want.
But let's be honest, we can't compete. If Chelsea, for argument's sake, if we're after a player A, argument's sake, and then Chelsea make an inquiry on player A, all of a sudden that guy's value goes up 20 million quid and the wage demands double.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's why losing Mislintat is so huge, because if you're buying from another league, they instantly look at you and go, well, you're a Premier League club, so we can double the price because you've got the money, because you've got all that TV revenue. If you have Mislintat, you go and get a player that no one's really interested in, and if you can keep it quiet and sort of under the radar, you can get them at a lower price, and you'll get a bargain like we did, I think, with Torreira and, say, Guendouzi as well, you know, those sort of people.
We absolutely fucked ourselves when Mislintat wasn't given the promotion that he was in line for and should have been given because of this fact, because he could have completely revamped the way we scout, the way we bring players in. He could have found those the value for money signings that where you're not getting upcharged $20 million just because, you know, you're a bigger club and clubs think they can rent you for your cash. And I think that that's something that we now have to deal with because Raul currently is in charge because we don't have a technical director. No, it's going to be, the summer is going to be a disappointing for a lot of fans because a lot of fans still think that there are people saying we should go out and get De Ligt. Why in God's name would De Ligt come here? It doesn't matter that we're Arsenal and we play in the Premier League. First of all, Ajax is a bigger club than us and they play in Champions League. Right there, there's no reason why he would leave Ajax for us. Why? When? Why should he? Donny van de Beek.
He's got a box, isn't he?
Yeah, Donny van de Beek is another one. Same thing. You know, he. You could argue that he outperformed Frankie de Jong in Champions League in the last round. And Frankie de Jong is going to Barcelona. Do you really think that there's not going to be a bigger club going after Donny van de Beek if he's available? And why, again, why would he come to Arsenal? We need to be dominating the parts of the market where, like John said, we're going to teams and the clubs who can't say no to us paying the genuine value for their for their best players. Sampdoria, we're never going to turn down the money that we were going to pay for Torre because that's the best they could have possibly done. And we're a bigger club than Sampdoria. So it was the right fit. But and that's how we have to negotiate the market now. And I don't think we're going to be able to do that with Raul in charge unless we get a technical director who has that ability. Like, we should be trying to bite the hand off Ajax for Mark Overmars to come in because he's made a lot of the signings as well, similar.
Okay, but actually, Drew, Gunnar's podcast have asked a question here, okay? Yeah. And they say, enough with fancy foreign defenders like Koulibaly or Manolas. Is it time we suck up the premium and just buy defenders with Premier League experience?
100%. It makes a huge difference because when you buy a player from, I don't know, we'll give Chris a shout and say Ligue 1. If you go and go to France and buy a player from France, they have to adapt to a new country, the change of the country, the city, the club, the expectations of the league. Those are four things you have to adapt to. At least if you're buying from the Premier League, they're already adapted to the league, the pace of the league, the physical requirements. They've already played against a lot of the players that they're going to be lining up against, and they're just going to be in a different shirt. There's a lot of things that you don't have to worry about. So he has to adjust to the manager and a new squad. That's pretty much it. And there's a lot of, say, center backs at teams that are lower than us on the table who can walk right into our starting 11. Wolves have one. Everton arguably have two. You know, even Diop from West Ham could probably walk into our 11 and improve us. And those are the types of players we should be looking at. And there's no reason why you have to pay an extra $10 million, so be it. But if it's going to make us better and if we're more able to compete from the jump, from the beginning of the season, instead of having to wait 2 or 3 months for players to adapt, then if it puts us in a better position, then so be it.
Okay, cool. John, magnificent Andrew Fife asks, on a scale of 1 to absolute trash, how would the panel rate Wobby's cameo today?
Oh, Mr. Fife is not Iwobi's biggest fan.
He's not. He's really not.
No, he's really not. I thought Iwobi was okay when he came on. Look, he put some really good balls in the box that no one attacked. Yes, look, his final delivery is not perfect. I know that. And sometimes he can run down a blind alley and deal with the ball. But there is no other player in our squad who I'm confident in Leno or Cech kicking it out to, him taking the ball under pressure with two players on his back and then running it 40 yards up the pitch. No one else does that in our entire squad. That doesn't mean that Iwobi's an amazing player or, you know, he's world class or anything else. It's a damning indictment of the rest of our squad, if anything. But I don't think he's that bad. I think he's a good squad player and he's someone who is handy to come off of the bench and he's a utility player who can play a variety of positions. He's improved year on, year out. So, you know, this has been his best season for goals and assists. It may not be the numbers that people want, but I don't think he's ever going to be a real goal scorer. It's not his game. I just don't think he's got it in him. I think he is more of a link player who will carry the ball for you, and that's it. I think sometimes the problem I have with some of our fans, and I'm guilty of this myself, is that, one, I think I expect way too much from this club in the current state it's in, and a lot of the fans do. And because of that, we expect too much of the players. These players are not as good as everyone thinks. And this club is not in a position that it should be guaranteed Champions League football every year. We're not that good at the moment. And we haven't been for quite a few years. If anything, as much as I wanted Arsene to go, he was, I think, on the scale of overachieving in his last few seasons. Not the last one, obviously. than anything else with the squad he had and the players he had. Can you imagine what our results would have been like, or, you know, FA Cup return or anything like that, if we didn't have Alexis Sanchez, a player who everyone hates and roundly laughs at? Can you imagine what would have happened if he wasn't in the squad for that couple of seasons? Would have been nowhere. Absolutely. He single-handedly dragged us through games. And we were very lucky that we had an exceptional, truly world-class talent in the team who could do that. It's, you know, so I think people expect too much from the players and the club at the moment.
Okay. We've been going on for quite a while now, guys, longer than we should have, but mainly because we got Drew in. So we wanted to get through the questions, and Drew's got a lot of knowledge of sort of German football, etc., and stuff like that. There's two questions I want to end with. One I want us all to answer, and then the second one is one of my questions. Carlito Alguna asks, anyone confident that we'll get a result at Valencia? John, you first.
I'm going to say yes, because we got that third goal. If we hadn't got the third goal, I would have been terrified. But yeah, I think we can do it.
Okay, Drew.
I agree. John's spot on. The third goal changed it. I think if we go 2-1 up, I think we struggle. But 3-1 up, I think we're fine.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with the boys. And the last question I want to end with is, obviously, there's been a lot of change over the past 12 months at the club. Arsene going, Unai coming in. There was the much vaunted triumvirate of Ivan Gazidis, Raul Sonmehi, and Sven Mislintat. Since Ivan's left, on a scale of 1 to 10, how do you think Raul Sonmehi has done? John, I want to start with you.
Well, for him personally, he's done great, because he's assumed all power at the club by the looks of it. Because he's kicked Sven out, who I think would have been on almost par terms with him if he got the promotion that he probably should have been given. For the club, it's not great, because we don't have that technical director of football. And you saw in the January window, I know it's a difficult window and it's hard to get the right players you want and everything, and it's inflated prices, blah, blah, blah. But there were other players we could have gone out there and could have helped the squad. And instead we got Denis Suarez, who, if you spoke to anyone who watched Barcelona, will tell you was way too lightweight and was going to do nothing. And despite his injury before that, he did nothing. So, yeah, not great.
Drew.
Again, John's right. I think from a personal standpoint, Raul got exactly what he wanted. He's de facto head of the club, because only people who are above him are Josh and Stan. And they're hands off, relatively. I guess Josh is more hands-on. He keeps more of an eye on it. But Raul is essentially running Arsenal Football Club right now. So from a personality standpoint, or personal standpoint rather, he's come off quite well. I don't think he's the one that's going to be the one to ring in the changes that we want to see at the club. I don't think he's done enough. And I think you saw with the Suarez deal, as John said, that you're looking at the kind of deals we're going to be doing. Like links with Andre Gomez is a prime example. You know, he'll know Andre Gomez because Andre Gomez played in La Liga. I think you're going to be seeing a lot of players being brought in or scouted that are going to come from La Liga or the Portuguese League, or maybe even South America, because that's what he knows best. That's where a lot of his contacts are. But the question will be, are they going to be the right players? If we're trying to build a team that Raul wants to see, we're not going to win anything. So,
I got to be honest. Suddenly, he really worries me. He really, really worries me. I look at the way the club has gone since I was no fan of Ivan, but since he's left, it's trying to become a personal fiefdom, and I have no faith in Raul Sonmehi. This is not Barcelona. No. We are not that club. And if he thinks it's going to operate like that here, he's got another thing coming. A lot is going to depend on what sort of money the Kronks are prepared to spend this season as well. But he's done great for himself. He's got his thumbs up. He's happy. But
I do have one question, if we have time, for both of you. Do you think that are you not okay with us running sustainably, or do you think the Kronkies should be investing and giving us, opening up some of the cash reserves regularly, or do you think there is enough for us to actually compete on a sustainable level in terms of the market?
I think sustainability would have been a lot I would give sustainability, this club being run sustainably, a lot more credence if we'd have kept Mislintat.
Yes, then we're of like mind. That's
what do you think, it's kind of, we've got, Sunday he's gotten rid of the guy to enable us to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I don't have a problem with sustainability at all. Look, I never had a problem with people, owners coming in, spending loads of money at a club. It's fine. The way it's done now, it's kind of locked in that the smaller clubs can't do that because of FFP. So, you know, if you do go and buy a club, you're not allowed to actually improve them anymore, weirdly. You have to do it over this very long period. But sustainability is fine with me. But yeah, whether it's Mislintat or someone else, you've got to have someone like that, and you've got to have a clear direction the whole club is moving in. And the manager is almost... You're not a manager anymore. You're just a coach. That's your squad. You go and coach them, you know, because this is the style of football we're going to play. These are the type of players we're going to buy. This is the improvement we want to see from those players. Some of them will make it at the club. Some of them won't, but we're always making profit and then reinvesting it back into the club. And I do think you can do that in a way that, you know, can get you results. I mean, I know lots of people say Liverpool spent a lot of money. They spent a lot of money from selling Philip Coutinho, who they bought for a pretty good price. So, you know, that's more about good recruitment, what they've done there, and obviously Suarez as well. That's where they've spent their money from. They've got it from player sales, and they've got them. So you
Suarez,
you look at the position they're in now, and obviously that's, they've got exciting manager in Klopp, and he's had a long period to do that. But you've seen that improvement every season. They haven't actually gone out and, you know, gone, oh, our owner's coming in, chucked 500 million quid at us. It's all been reinvested from the club itself, so it can be done.
And they also gambled from on players from clubs that are much smaller. Firmino was at Hoffenheim, Mane was at Southampton, and they brought them in, and those players have improved. And
they fitted the system.
Yeah, exactly.
That's because they had a clear direction of
what
they were playing. Yep. And I hate bringing that lot up, but in the way that Pochettino has done it, if you look at the amount of money people have spent, clubs, I think Spurs are like 17th in the league in terms of like what they've actually invested. And you consider what they've managed to do and how some of the players have gotten the improvements they've made in players. That is a really impressive thing to do. So, you know, we should be taking a leaf out of some other clubs' books.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, guys, that's it for today. Final shout out to Andrew Fife, who says, Davis out, Davis out, Davis out. You are correct, mate. You are right. Oh, Jonathan, Andrew Fife, you're a man of wisdom. What can I say? That's it for tonight, guys. There's still 180 of you watching, and we've been going on forever. My thanks to you all. You've been superb in the chat box. It's been really interesting today. It's been fun as well, even though it's been such a dire performance from the club. God save Aaron Ramsey. Good luck to him on his travels. Let's hope Unai can pull us out of the doldrums and get a win on Thursday night. To those of you watching on listening, on iTunes, Stitcher, whatever platform it is, thank you for your time. Really appreciate it. You know, you're always superb and you back us up. Massive thanks to J Rob, Yvonne Okofor, Martin Gilmore, Sean Lee Goodwin, Blair Slater, Scream Boy 8, Good Lagunas podcast, Michael Hernandez and Michael Hahnemann. Thank you, guys. You're all far, far, far too generous. Drew, good to have you back on, pal. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me back. I'm sorry. I sound like absolute shit. But
don't worry. Talk sense, though, mate. You talk sense.
I try.
You do.
Thanks for having me.
Mate, it's been a pleasure speaking to you again. It really has. John, thank you very much.
Thank you. And also, thank you for letting me have a little sneaky preview for you. I've got Thursday off. Unbelievable. Jason's let me have the night off. He's frantically checking. Hang on a minute.
whoa. Stop.
Yeah.
Stop.
No, I'm not doing Thursday. No. You're doing it, I think. Is it Josh and you and Ellis?
No, not me doing it. I'm not doing Thursday.
Oh, so it must be Josh and Ellis and someone else. I don't know.
On Thursday, it will be Josh hosting, Carl and Ellis.
There we go.
Oh, Oh, it's going to be interesting when. Looking forward to that. You're on with me and Danny for the last game of the season.
Yeah, for Burnley, for the pointless trip to Burnley. That'll be fun.
Yeah, fucking epic.
Hey, look, we could win 5-0. And
I still would be happy, unless we run Thursday night.
And Spurs could lose 3-0, and we'd be fine. Burnley have conceded 4 or more goals twice this season, and one of those teams was Everton. So if Everton can do it, we can do it. And Everton are dreadful away from home.
Oh, fuck it.
All right, I've got two good things to end the show on. One is former Gooner, left Arsenal, obviously, the team, the only invincible team, you know, in the league. And he's gone and playing in Greece, Chibarakprom. And they've also just finished the season unbeaten. They are also invincible. So, look, you go to Arsenal, you join a club that's invincible, you leave, you go to a lesser club, you take the invincible spirit with you. So, well done, Chuba. And the funniest thing I've seen on Twitter all day, Emmanuel Frimpong criticising Granit Xhaka about how to play midfield. Which is truly the most incredible thing I've ever seen. Yeah. Keep them coming, Frimmy.
That's all I've got to say is, okay, the banter era is back. The banter era is back. This chat box makes me smile. You are therapy in writing, and I love you all. Thank you ever so much. Guys, thanks for your time. Thank you for supporting us. We really appreciate it. John, switch this shit off.